So, Dave, there are a lot of things going on in this scenario. This pilot has a handful with a true terrifying emergency, and the pilot hasn't made it easier because the pilot forgot a critical step on the emergency flow for an engine fire, which was shutting off the fuel before it even reaches the engine compartment. But that could very easily happen in a panicked moment, and something actually catches you by surprise. How does a pilot deal with that, or catch the problem maybe in a moment of potential real panic and confusion?
Yeah, that's great. You know, in the scenario pilot to me is to be commended already, because it's a hard step to shut down the engine. I mean, by quickly pulling the mixture, you know, he's taken a critical first step in that he's committed to, you know, doing what he can to get this fire out. You know, these are things we just don't practice in reality. You know, who among us has practiced shutting down a single engine on an airplane in flight, you know, for real? I guess in answer to your question, though, I mean, it's like the key is not just memorizing these memory items that are on every airplane checklist. In the case of an engine fire, you know, shut down the engine is the first thing that you do. But the mechanical knowledge to know that that's not enough, that the second step has to be taken of turning off the fuel selector, and knowing why that is critical, you know, really helps in a situation like this.
Paul, then Richard.
I'm going to go with scenario 5 on this. A number of years ago, we had an author who wrote an article about this very scenario. You have an engine failure or an engine fire. What's the best plan? His recommendation was just what Dave recommended. A VFE basically dived to the ground. So we published this. It made sense to me. Well, naturally, the letters came in, and one of them said, you know, that's not the best method. You will get a much better descent rate if you go to full flaps and put the airplane in a steep tank, maybe 45 degrees, pitch down. Don't worry about VFE. You're in an emergency situation. Who cares? You might bend the flaps, but you're probably not going to break them off. And I didn't believe him. I published the letter, but I didn't believe him. And we exchanged email, and he said, go and try it. And so I did try it. I tried it in a Mooney. Gear and flaps down, 45-degree banks against the VFE dive. And it made quite a difference. I don't remember the numbers, but it was as much as 1,000 feet descent a difference. And in their circumstance, what do you most want? You want to be on the ground. So you want the highest possible descent rate you can get. And I haven't done the math on this, but that's not necessarily VFE. And as far as the putting the fire out, I have no expectation that VFE dive is necessarily going to do that. This is Tiger's an 0360. So it's a lower deck fire. That's where the fire is. Whatever the cause, broken fuel line or whatever, you got to get all the air in through the inlets and down through the baffling, down through the cylinders to get in there and blow out the fire. You know, I've heard of this before. I don't know of the specific instance where it's happened in that type of engine. Big radials, maybe, yes, where the cylinders are right out front. So I have no expectation that you're going to get the fire out. I want to be on the ground. And with the spiraling method, yeah, you'll have to keep it under control, but that's a minor trade-off. You ought to be able to do that anyway. By the time you get on the deck, you're not going to be going 170. You're going to be going 130 or 140 and get it slowed down to get it under control and get on the ground that much faster and that much safer. And if you have to open the canopy, you could probably get away with it without having to depart the airplane.
Richard.
Jeff, I liked option 4, and Dave kind of hinted at it when he said his technique would be he would start a 90-degree left turn to keep that positive G on the airplane, and I would just keep that coming and get to VNE pretty quickly. The other reason I like it, this technique, is if you look at where the scenario happens, you'd have to cross over Salinas to get to the runway. And in my mind, you've got an airplane that's on fire. If you don't make it now, your emergency is going to be someone else's disaster. And I think as pilots, we have a responsibility to avoid that as best we can. So you stay out in the open field and descend at VNE. And the only slight difference I'd have with Dave is I think I would spiral. And then I used to fly Navion a lot. So let me address the canopy thing. The canopy will bind. absolutely will bind. You won't be able to get that canopy open in an off-field landing. I think it's almost 100% of the time that happened in Navions, which are very sturdy built airplanes. So it is really important that you crack the canopy or open it somewhere before you land.
Michael, then John.
It would petrify me to try to put one of these things in a field with the canopy for that very reason, right? And then I look at a couple things. We're talking about a field, but we're talking about approaching a field at V&E. And we all know that most of the time we're high and fast, and now trying to get it into the field is almost impossible. Now try to do that at the V&E of the airplane. You need to be a pretty good judge of your speed and the rate at which the airplane will slow down and all of those things. So I think the first thing I would do is start looking for a road before I would ever look for a field. So if I did have excessive speed, I can, you know, again, the power line thing, the overpass, I get all of that. But I've seen it on YouTube quite a bit. People come down there and over the wires under the bridge and put it on the road. And to me, that would be my first option, is try to get it on a road somewhere.
And just let me challenge you a little bit, Michael, on that. You have a fire, an uncontained fire under the cowling, and you're trying to get down, and you're going to also, while descending, keep an eye out for a road. Is that practical?
I mean, to me it is. I mean, like, well, you're looking for a field. Why would you not look for a road? The road is longer, right? So I don't want to end up in this field. Again, I don't know what's underneath me. If it's in the west somewhere, it's a plowed field. Is it muddy? Is the airplane going to flip in an instant? All of those things come into play. Or am I going to smash into a bunch of trees at the far end? Is there a ditch at the far end? All of those things, to me, are just a huge risk. And I would put, call me silly, I'm one of those people that likes a piece of pavement underneath me, and I deal with that when I got there.
John?
Back to the canopy thing. I've been flying a Tiger a lot lately, doing some training in it. And you actually have to hold the canopy open. You can fly with it open, but what most people do is you take a little piece of PVC pipe and put it on the rail or a pool noodle or something, because the slipstream will actually blow it closed. So in this case, you wouldn't even have the option of opening it at altitude. And that's actually contrary to what most POHs advise. Usually they advise closing all the windows, closing all the vents to try and keep the fire and smoke out of the cockpit. So at some point, though, in the landing roll or the landing approach, you probably want to open it when you get slow, but on the way down, you may not have that option.
You know, I already heard Dave with the V&E straight ahead. We've got Paul with flaps down and something around flap speed or a little better in a spiral. We've got Richard, which was, I believe, V&E with a spiral, or up to V&E with a spiral. So we've got three different answers at the table here. John, Michael, and Dean, let's hear you weigh in. John, what would you do?
I think V&E with the spiral to get some G loading on it too. Get down as quick as you can.
Michael?
Yeah, I agree. Exact same thing, but I'm going to put it on a road.
Wow. So Michael and Richard actually agreed. Amazing. Dean?
I'm really struggling to come up with an answer for this one. And after hearing the deal about the quicker capability of descending rapidly by putting the flaps down, I like that thought. But here's a question I have for you guys. Is this worth practicing in flight instruction? Because here we are grappling for a good answer here, and we have lots of different opinions. Is this something we should actually practice, different ones of these scenarios?
I think it absolutely is. And I tried it after this reader mentioned it. We got our little notebook and data sheet out, recorded the data on it. And anybody who's in this situation, if they have tried it before, they will have that knowledge in the bag and be able to make the judgment. Instead of trying to figure it out on the fly. You don't have to do it five times. If you do it once or twice, you have a pretty good feel for what it'll take. And, you know, if you collect the data, you take Dave's V&E method, it might be faster. It might get you lower faster, but you're going to be fast when you get there. The flap method, gets you lower. We found it did it faster, but you're more in a configuration to land. You're a little bit slower. But you'd have to try it with the airplane you have and see how it works.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because if you have an engine fire or any kind of fire erupt in flight, you don't want to be sitting there trying to decide which one of these I'm going to do. You want to have a quick reaction.
Dave?
You know, I think to Dean's point, I think this is something that could be practiced well and fairly realistically in a sim. And also, you know, I'm remembering a podcast that Richard did with a Warbird pilot, a T-28 pilot, who had an engine fire, on descent, you know, coming into his home airport to land. And he was doing an overhead approach, and, you know, the cockpit just erupted in flames, and it was largely fed by a hydraulic system, which you know, you're not going to find on a Grumman Tiger. But, you know, in interviewing that pilot and listening to him recount his experience, you know, he was saying that it's like the whole idea of pulling the mixture and shutting the engine down in flight, you know, he was a well-trained pilot. It didn't really occur to him in the moment. And I don't think it, in listening to his description, I don't think it would have occurred to me either. You know, he's almost there. He's trying to get the gear and the flaps down and land the plane. He's got this this smoke and fire, and suddenly he's enveloped in it. And so, you know, it really brought home to me that the importance of, you know, of pulling the mixture, shutting down the engine, and most importantly, shutting it off at the source, which is the fuel selector.
You know, Dave, that brings up something you said back at the beginning of this discussion about how many of us actually practice shutting off an engine in flight, right? And there is that whole law of primacy thing that we do, you know, run an engine drill as private pilots, you know, or student pilots, and we touch the fuel selector, we touch the mixture, we touch the mags, and we say what we would do kind of as this little mantra, but never actually reach down and twist a knob and pull a knob and turn a key to put some muscle memory in there. How important do people think that really is? How do you think it would actually really make a difference in the moment, if you will? And is it worth the risk of whatever it is, whatever that risk might be, of actually shutting down an engine in flight? The only engine. Dean?
Yes, I think it's really important to actually do it in flight. And of course, we want to do it with all the safety margin in place, like altitude over the airport and those kinds of things. But how many Cessna 150s have you seen where the fuel selector valve is extremely stiff and hard to turn? And so to actually know what that feels like when you're going to turn that selector off, I think it's really important. And then to even back up a step, it reminds me of how important it is to make sure that the fuel selector is even going to turn the fuel off when you do that. Because at the annual inspections, it's somewhat frequent to find one that leaks past the selector valve a little bit. So, and it's really easy to check. If you turn the selector to off and try to drain the gascolator, the fuel strainer, you should not get any out of there. If you don't, it's sealing well. But as far as turning the selector, I think it's really important to actually do that. Like you said, develop some muscle memory so that you know exactly what it feels like.
I just want to say that we've got the AMP on the record here saying that shutting an engine down in flight, no big deal, everybody, as long as you're over an airport with room to go to get there. Now, I'm with Dean on this. I'm absolutely with Dean on this. But I just want to say, because I'm sure we will get some people commenting on that. John, did you have a comment there?
Well, it's just you could do the same thing on the ground and accomplish the same thing. And with the engine running and go through the drill the same way, a whole lot safer.
Paul.
A question. When's the last time anybody's done this?
You know, I've shut the engine down in flight over an airport to demonstrate glide capability, but I've never done it saying, okay, simulated fire in the engine compartment, what do you do? And I've certainly never done it combined with an emergency descent.
When's the last time you did it?
Oh gosh, it's over a year ago. You know, we actually made a video. I had a videographer with me, and we were demonstrating how the glide changes with the prop windmilling versus not. And it was kind of, it was sort of internally decided that that was too hot to show, you know, that it might be regarded as careless and reckless. And would we even want to show that? And we thought that, you know, it's maybe not worth the pushback.
I could have got a good blog out of it, though.
Go, Richard.
So, Jeff, I do want to weigh in here and say, don't try this at home. We don't want people going up and shutting down engines for real for training. I'm not a fan of that at all. So I just wouldn't recommend actually shutting down engines over a runway or not for training. You can get very close to the same scenario. Okay, I'll pause while everybody tells me it's not the same with the engine actually running and idling. The risk is so far greater when you actually shut the engine down. You can accomplish the training without doing that.
Michael.
Yeah, this is twice in one session. I agree with Richard. I just don't think the risk is worth it at all. And from your first private pilot days, you should know engine fire, get rid of the fuel, mixture, fuel shutoff, right? It should be as ingrained in you as it is any other emergency.
You know, in some countries, part of your check ride is that you do a power off-field landing. Some places in Europe, I remember talking to a pilot from Austria, and he was just saying, yeah, they're flying a Super Cub. Part of the check ride is you shut it down and you land in the grass somewhere. And so so it's like, you know, I'm sure that Richard and Michael are correct, that it can be statistically shown that there will be more accidents, that it's like accidents will happen if you do widespread engine shutdowns in single engine planes with the engine truly stopped. But it's like, I don't regard it as something that's completely death defying either, because in other countries they do it normally as a matter of normal private pilot training.
I wonder what their accident rate is though, Dave. I'd like to see the accident rate associated with that.
It would be interesting.
I have to toss I need to toss a little disclaimer in here. When I said what I did, I was not necessarily following it through that we should actually land the airplane that way. I was maybe thinking of turning the fuel off and then bringing it back on. But I appreciate what you're saying, Richard and Michael. And that's a really good point. Maybe run the airplane up to fairly good power on the ground and try it then. I just think the startle effect should be observed at some point.
You know, but to follow up on Richard's point, though, I mean, it's like, I bet even if you could statistically show that there were accidents in training, could you also show that there were survivable engine out events that people landed safely from because of their training? I don't know the answer, but I'm intrigued by the question.
Paul.
I agree with Dave. I mean, I don't consider it crazy hazardous. There is a training value there, but the reason I asked if anybody has done it recently, I haven't. I'm not quite sure why, but I used to do it, not all the time, but we did it occasionally, and we'd shut the engine down, do the glide experiment that Dave talked about, change the prop settings and so forth, and start the engine back up and land. But you have to be prepared to land out of that because the engine might not start again. There's always that possibility. And I think it's a very close thing, but I think it's probably worth the risk in some circumstances.
What about the spiraling down versus VNE dive as a training exercise there? Because clearly that's another part of this if you do have to get down quickly. And I've done the same thing that you were talking about, Paul. We actually filmed it looking at what the speed was, or vertical speed, so I could go back and look rather than try and remember out of a dive with flaps and slipping, and a spiral with flaps. And the spiral wins every time, one way or another, is kind of a wash in the series we did it in, flaps versus not. But we were still performing a rapid descent maneuver and at times slipping the airplane, times with the flaps out. It's real easy to get over flap speed with that. Is there a training risk versus benefit there? How does someone, if they want to practice that part of the maneuver, how do they go about that? And is that worthwhile, or is it, you know, that's got real risk to it too, if people don't know what they're doing?
I think you'd have to limit it to VFE or slightly over, but you get your data and you have a hack for what the data is like in that steep spiral at whatever speed you went to. So, you know, it's 2,600 feet a minute or whatever it is. And then, you know, if you really get in a jam, you just push it over. The flaps are expendable at that point.
I just wanted to go back to talk about the training issue. And in the commercial pilot ACS, one of the required tasks is an emergency descent, like a simulated fire. So for the commercial level, actually says situations that would require an emergency descent, i.e. depressurization, smoke, or engine fire. And the requirement is to use a bank angle between 30 and 45 degrees to maintain positive load factors during a descent and maintain airspeed plus zero minus 10. It's right out of the ACS. Yeah, but also it requires the up to 45 degrees of bank angle.
You know, it's interesting to me that we have such a scenario that I think uniformly terrifies pilots and certainly would, you know, give the willies, I think, to every single person at this table. And yet we have such different answers and reactions as to how we would handle it. And I think Dean's point is really well taken, that on fire in the air is definitely not the time to have a plan preloaded on how you're going to get onto the ground as quickly as possible. It's also not the time to find out whether you have, you know, really ingrained in yourself the emergency flow and all the steps, because in the moment of panic, it's easy to forget stuff. And in this case, this pilot forgot what Paul had referred to as the most important thing: turn off the fuel going to the front of the airplane as far back in the process as possible. Had that happened, then the fire may have gone out even on its own. And as Dave pointed out, gliding to an actual airport would have become a real option. And then again, backing up even further, one thing we didn't talk about, but I think is also something to take away from the scenario: the plane was talking to the pilot a little bit. There's actually a real scenario, a real event, excuse me, at the beginning of this, with that fuel pressure going up and down and a real engine fire that destroyed a real airplane without actually hurting the people on board, because they got it back on the ground. And it was the fuel pressure sender unit had started to back out of where it was screwed into the fuel line. And then it came out all the way and started spraying fuel all over the engine compartment. And that was the source of the fire. So maybe one other takeaway is, you know, if the plane is talking to you as well, run through some of those scenarios and what you might need to do just to prevent the whole emergency procedure from having to be invoked in the first place.